This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
In this week's Sedra, we're given the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh that involved the declaration of Rosh Chodesh by the Beis Din in Yerushalayim. We know that Rosh Chodesh can fall either on the 29th or on the 30th or on the 31st day of a month. In other words, once a lunar month has started, the following month will start either 30 days later or 31 days later. And the Beis Din used to accept evidence from people throughout the country to determine when Rosh Chodesh was, because Rosh Chodesh is fixed. When the Beis Din are satisfied that reliable individuals have seen the first glint of the new moon, thereafter they declare Mekudash, they declare that the new month is sanctified, and that initiates the new month. If the 30th day goes past and there's been no evidence of the Pegimas Halavona, actual light part of the Lavona, of the moon, having been sighted, then automatically the 31st day becomes Rosh Chodesh, because it can't be anything else. The procedure was complex, and it required the Beis Din of three outstanding Talmidei Chachomim, to sit, to accept evidence, and most important of all, to declare the new moon, the new month in. Without that declaration, even if they knew for sure that there had been a new moon, Rosh Chodesh doesn't commence. The Gemara says, for example, if the whole of Klal Yisrael, all the Jewish people, saw it, including the Beis Din itself, they can see it there, it's in the sky, but they didn't get to say Mekudosh, they didn't get to their declaration before the day was out, then it's fulfilled on Rosh Chodesh the next day. Even though physically everybody saw that the new moon fell on that day, since the declaration did not take place on that day, the next day is Rosh Chodesh, not the first day. Rosh Chodesh follows the declaration of the Beis Din, not the mere astronomical phenomena of the moon becoming visible to earth. The Midrash says the following: Haroye es halavona, heyoch tzorich levorich, bizman shayu Yisrael mekadshin es haChodesh. One who sees the moon, who sees the first glimpse of a new moon, what bracha must he make, referring to those times when we used to be Mekadesh Chodoshim, when we used to sanctify months and accept evidence as I've just described? At that time, what bracha was said? Yesh min Rabbonin Amrin, there were different views. Some of the Rabbonin said the correct bracha to say is Baruch Ato Hashem Mekadesh Chodoshim, blessed be Hashem who renews the months. And others said, no, one must say, blessed be Hashem who sanctifies the months. And there was a third group of Rabbonim that used to say, Baruch Ato Hashem, blessed be Hashem, Mekadesh Yisroel, who sanctifies the Jewish people. Why? What's that got to do with Rosh Chodesh? Shim Ein Yisroel Mekadeshin Yisroel. Because if the Jewish people wouldn't sanctify the month, wouldn't declare the month Kodesh, then the sanctity of the new moon would be nothing. The sanctity of Rosh Chodesh and of the new month would have no effect. It's not an astronomical phenomenon, it's a religious phenomenon. And if Yisrael, if the Beis Din representing the people of Israel doesn't declare the month sanctified, the sanctity of the month is nothing. And therefore the correct bracha is to bless the Ribbono Shel'olam who sanctified Yisrael. And don't be amazed by that, says the Midrash. Because after all, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Kideshis Yisrael, the Ribbono Shel'olam sanctified Yisrael, Shenema, for it says,
V'yisim li kedoshim ki kodosh ani Hashem. You shall be holy to me, for I am holy, I am Hashem. U'lefi shehem kedoshim l'shamayim, and since they, the Jewish people, are sanctified to God, lekach, therefore, ma shehem mekadshim hu mekudosh. Therefore, what they sanctify is holy. If you want to understand this further, say ulamad mikli hashoris. Go and learn this from the principle that applies to the utensils, the vessels that used to be used in the Beis Hamikdash. Moshe kiddush is hamishka. Moshe sanctified the mishka. Ask the medrash vers kol kelov mihoyo mekadshim yochlo yom Moshe lovo lekadshim. And in future generations, all the new utensils which are used in the Beis Hamikdash, who would sanctify them? Could we recall Moshe from his grave and get him to sanctify them? How was it done? Elomei Yosim, what did they used to do? Hayu Hakohen Mekabel B'Dovah Shel Kodesh V'Hakli Miskadeshes. The Kohen used to receive something holy in the utensil, and thus the utensil became holy. V'im kli chol, and if an ordinary utensil, keshehu mismali min hakodesh, when it gets filled with something holy, miskadesh, it becomes holy itself. Al achas kama v'kama Yisrael shehim kedoshim u'mekadshim mis hakodesh. How much more so Yisrael, the Jewish people, who are holy, when they sanctify the man. Take the Midrash up till there. In this Midrash there's an amazing concept. It says the Midrash, it's not the Ribbono Shel Olam who sanctifies the month, it's the Jewish people. How do the Jewish people do it? Because they're holy themselves. And we see in the Beis Hamikdash that one holy thing can make another thing holy. That's the simple translation of the Midrash. But there's a very deep concept here. The Midrash tells us that Kedusha, sanctity, is not merely something which contains sanctity, but more important, something which is able to transmit sanctity. A mikveh, not only is a mikveh tahira, not only is it pure, but a mikveh can purify things that are impure. That's the amazing concept of a mikveh. Not just something pure. There can be lots of things that are clean or pure, or undefiled. A mikveh, not only is it undefiled, but it has the power to cleanse other things. That's what a mikveh has. We've talked before of in the laws of Shabbos about a kli rishon and a kli sheni. You can have a kli sheni, a kli rishon is a pot which has stood on the stove and is still more than 45 degrees centigrade. That's a kli rishon. A kli sheni is a pot which did not stand on the stove. Water or food or whatever has been poured out from the pot that stood on the stove into the kli sheni. And a kli sheni has much lighter laws than a kli rishon. What about the temperature? The temperature of a kli sheni can be 90 degrees. So it is possible to have a kli sheni of 90 degrees centigrade and a kli rishon of 46 degrees centigrade, and we will treat the kli rishon more severely than we'll treat the kli sheni, because the kli rishon can affect a second thing more easily than a kli sheni. A kli sheni is in the process of cooling. A kli rishon is not in the process of cooling. Kli Rishon is usually in the process of becoming hot. The sides of a Kli Rishon are usually hotter than the content, because it is stood on the fire, on the stove. And therefore the contents are having their heat increased by the sides of the pot. The power of the Kli Rishon to transmit its cooking ability is what the Halacha is interested in. Not its own temperature. Its ability to cook other things, that's what we're interested in. The mikveh, what we're interested in the mikveh is not its own cleanliness only. We're interested in its ability to cleanse other things. And so Kedusha is not something which is holy. That's not a map of a sign of Kedusha. Kedusha is something which can transmit sanctity. Then it's holy. It's not something static. It's not something sterile and closed. It's something dynamic. Kedusha must be dynamic. Kedusha is something which can transmit and does transmit Kedusha. Sanctity transmits sanctity.
How?
Says the Medrash, there are two different methods by which sanctity can be transmitted. The first is by declaration. I can take a lamb and I can say this lamb is for the purpose of a korban. It's going to be brought as a sacrifice. Immediately I say that, that lamb acquires certain halachas, certain laws of kedusha. That lamb is sanctified. It can be used for nothing else. It's dedicated and it's sanctified for that purpose. I can take an object, I can take my watch, and I can say this is to be sanctified for the Beis HaMikdash. And if I said such a thing, then from that moment onwards, it acquires certain laws. It cannot be used for any purpose other than use in the Beis HaMikdash. So a declaration can transmit Kedusha. But how does it do so? What is the method? I think, in fact, not 100% sure, but I think that even a non-Jew could say that. A non-Jew also can dedicate an object to the Beis HaMikdash. You don't have to be a Jew to do it. Which means that it's not the inherent sanctity of the Jew which is transmitted to the object. When one declares something holy, when one declares that an object is to have sanctity, the sanctity is transmitted directly from the Ribbono Shel Olam to the object. The human being is merely the link. He takes the object and he links it to God. And that link gives it its holiness. I dedicate it to God. I want it to be used only for purposes of holiness, only for purposes of Kedusha. All I'm doing is connecting the two up together. This object, over which I have ownership and therefore the rights to do such a thing, the same as I'm entitled to sell it or to give it away to somebody, I'm giving it to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So where does its Kedusha come from? Its Kedusha now comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. God gives it its holiness, not me. That's the method of Kedusha by means of declaration. Where it's not really a transmittal of holiness, transmission of holiness from myself to the object, but rather an injection into the object of holiness from the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm merely the link. So, that says the Medrash, there's another form of transmitting holiness. You can do it without any declaration at all. One can take wine which has been used on the Mizbeach, on the altar, and one can allow that wine to be poured into a brand new plate, pot, which is manufactured in an ordinary factory. It has no kedusha. One goes to the hardware store and buys a pot. And one puts the pot, one collects the pot, allows the pot to collect the wine that has been used on the Mizbeach, and the pot becomes holy from that time onwards. It cannot be used for anything else. It may only be used in the Beis HaMikdash for the purpose of korbanos, and it has all the dinim, all the halachas of kedusha that apply to it, without any declaration at all. So where did it get its kedusha from? Nobody connected that pot up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Nobody made that linkage which we're talking about. Where did it get its holiness from? Says the Medrash, that's one of the forms of transmission of holiness. When an object is used for Kedusha, it becomes Kodesh. That's the second principle of the transmission of Kedusha. One can declare an object holy and one can use an object for holiness. And once an object has been used for holiness, it becomes holy. That's the end of it. With that we understand the whole principle which the Mesil Shishorim speaks about at the end of his Sefer, how a tzaddik, a person whose whole life is Torah, who lives the purity of Torah, everything he uses becomes Kodesh. Everything he touches, everything he handles becomes Kodesh. The food he eats becomes like a korban. The table at which he sits is like a mizbeach. And that's why the beautiful medrash of the two stones which Yaakov put at his head before he lay down to sleep, and by the time he woke up it was only one stone. And the medrash says because the stones started fighting with one another, each one wanted to have the tzaddik's head lie on it. and they became so aggravated that they melted into one unit, into one stone. So by the morning it was only one, it was one object. This urge on the part of the stone to have the tzaddik put his head on dafka on the stone, because the stone is elevated through its usage by the tzaddik. Everything that the righteous man uses is automatically elevated. When an object is used for kedusha, it becomes kodesh. When an object is used for sanctity, it becomes holy. And a man's life, a man whose entire life is sanctity and holiness, anything he uses to support that life is being used for sanctity, and that object becomes holy. It has all the dealing with kedusha. That's why by the Hasidim you'll often find that when the Rebbe's made a moitzi, then they come and chat all the rest of the challahs or the leftovers of his food or whatever it is. It's anything that's been used by a tzaddik has kedusha, and they want to eat some of that kedusha, so that's what they do. Up to there is no big kiddush. That much we know even without the Medrash. The Medrash goes further. And the Medrash tells us, I might think that the sanctity of the new moon is sanctity by declaration. That's what it appears. Witnesses come, they report to the Beis Din what they saw, the Beis Din cross-examines them to make sure that their information is accurate, and the Beis Din then says, Mekudosh, the month is sanctified. Surely this is sanctity by means of declaration. No, says the Medrash. This is a Kal Vachomer the Medrash learns from Klei Mishkan. V'im Kli Chol Kishu Mismalei Min HaKodesh Miskadesh. And if an ordinary utensil, when it becomes filled with sanctity, becomes holy, Alachas Kama V'Kama Yisrael Shem Kodeshu V'Mekadshim Mishachodesh. How much more so when Yisrael sanctify the month? And what does it mean? What is the Kal Vachomer? How can you say how much more so when Yisrael sanctify the month? They're doing it by means of declaration. They're simply connecting it up to God. Who says that it works the same way? No, says the Medrash. It's the same, works exactly the same principle as when you take the wine off the Mizbeach and you pour it into a brand new utensil, and that utensil becomes Kodesh. This is Kedusha by means of utilization. This is not Kedusha by means of declaration. When an object is utilized for Kedusha, it becomes Kodesh. We take the Rosh Chodesh, we take the new moon, and we utilize it. That's what makes it holy, not a mere declaration. How do we utilize it? We make a Yom Tov. Immediately we make a Yom Tov. Yom Tov is Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is also called a Moed. Rosh Chodesh is also called a Yom Tov. Every new moon is a Yom Tov, and there are halachas. We don't say Tachanun, and we say Halil, and you're supposed to have a Yom Tov Seuda, at least one meal during the day. One should sit down and have meat and wine at the meal. Every Rosh Chodesh one should dress a little bit differently to the way one dresses during the week. Every Rosh Chodesh is in itself a Moed. So as the Beis Din is satisfied that the information that they've received from the witnesses is accurate, they declare the Chodesh in, which means that now becomes a Rosh Chodesh. This moment is now a Rosh Chodesh. So they're utilizing the first glint of the moon, they're utilizing the sign of time which the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us in order to fix a Yom Tov immediately. And that Yom Tov is what gives the month its Kedusha. That Rosh Chodesh, with all its dinim of Kedusha, is what gives the month its special sanctity, not the mere declaration. Which of course makes a great deal of sense, because when the month is not a 29-day month, but a 30-day, when the month is not a 30-day month, but a 29-day month, when it is a 30-day month and the next month starts on the 31st day, nobody declares Mekudosh. There is no declaration. So where does the month get its sanctity from? Nobody makes a declaration, but there is Rosh Chodesh. There is the festivity of Rosh Chodesh. That takes place. And if there's the festivity of Rosh Chodesh, if there's the Moed of Rosh Chodesh, it's the utilization of the knowledge that a new month has begun to declare a Yom Tov. That is what gives the month its Kedusha. That's the Kabbalistic principle which this Medrash reveals to us. The Kabbalistic workings of Kiddush HaChodesh. What exactly is happening? And that's the halachic dispute with which the Medrash starts. What bracha do you say? Do you say Mechadesh Chodoshim? Or do you say Mekadesh Chodoshim? He who, bless God, who renews the month, or who sanctifies the month. And Yesh Me'em Oimrim, and the whole Midrash is based on the third view. No, it's Mekadesh Yisrael. That's the source of the wonder of Rosh Chodesh. Because if Yisrael didn't have the power to sanctify, there would be no Rosh Chodesh. It's because Yisrael, because the Jewish people themselves are blessed with a sanctity which can be transmitted, that's what gives us the power to have a Rosh Chodesh. So what do we need to bless God for on Rosh Chodesh? For being Mekadesh Yisrael, for giving Yisrael that sanctity. And that's why we do that every Yom Tov. On Shabbos and Kiddush, we say at the end of Kiddush, Mekadesh HaShabbos. We thank the Ribbono Shel Olam who sanctifies Shabbos. We don't sanctify Shabbos. We have nothing to do with Shabbos coming in. Every seventh day, come what may, Shabbos is in. You don't need a Beis Din, you don't need witnesses, you don't need anything. Every seventh day since the beginning of creation has been a Shabbos. That's it. It's Mekadesh HaShabbos. But on Yom Tov, what do we say? Mekadesh Yisrael. V'yom Azikoron, or the Azmanim, or whatever it is. Because it's Yisrael, through Yisrael's sanctity, that Yom Tov is declared a Yom Tov. It's a combination of both. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, Pesach will be on the 15th of Nisan. But who decides when the 15th of Nisan will be? That we decide. And therefore it's a partnership of the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael that fix every day of Yom Tov. And what gives us the ability to do that? Our own Kiddusha. So in the Yom Tov Kiddush we say, Mekadesh Yisrael V'Azmanim. Blessed be the Ribbono Shel Olam who sanctifies Yisrael by giving them the ability to sanctify the month and thereby decide exactly when Yom Tov will fall. And so much authority is given to us that even for purposes of convenience, the Beis Din is permitted to shift around within that one day space of the 30 or the 31 days to push Rosh Chodesh forward or to bring it further or to bring it forward the day. They have the authority to do so even for the convenience of Klal Yisrael. So we have a principle in Halacha that this Medrash believes that the bracha that used to be said was Mekadesh Yisrael. We have a principle in Kabbalah that the mechanism of the transmission of Kedusha was not from the Ribbono Shel Olam to the month, but from Klal Yisrael to the month. The method was not declaration, but utilization. That's the halachic and the Kabbalistic principle that we've learned. But there's a very important life principle that results from this. And that is, we learned from this Medrash, that time is not to be viewed as a measure. Time is to be viewed as a utensil. The comparison is made with the Klei HaMishkan, Klei HaMikdash. How is the sanctity given to the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash? It's filled with a Dovah Shebikdusha. V'im Kli Chol, if an ordinary vessel, Kishehu Mismalei Min HaKodesh, when it becomes filled with Kedusha, with something holy, Miskadesh, the utensil itself becomes holy. Allah has come with a Kama Yisrael, Shehem Kedushim and Mekadshim is HaKodesh. How much more so Yisrael, who sanctify the month? How do they do it? By filling it with Kedusha. Time is a unit. Time is a dimension. Time is in time what dimensions and space are in space. Time is it's a boundary that's given to remove the infinite eternity from time and to give it structure. And just as the human being cannot live in an unstructured physical environment, so he cannot live in an unstructured time environment. People need walls around them. Some people need the walls closer, and sometimes people need the walls further away. It depends on the bigness of the human being. There were times when people felt comfortable in castles, big halls, massive corridors, high ceilings, large gardens. That's what they felt comfortable in. They were big enough to cope with vast areas of space and to feel that they could control those areas. And nowadays, there's a certain security which people find in being cramped and confined into small spaces. And they, what used to be called semi-detached houses, which people used to buy in the old days because they couldn't afford anything better, they now change the name to townhouses, and people buy them because they dafka want them. They feel more secure, closed up, everything closer. Not too much space to govern. No big gardens to worry, and they call it security. makes them feel better. It's like you take a little baby, sleeps much better in a small cradle than it sleeps in on a big open bed. He feels comfortable if he can see the walls around him, if he can feel the walls around him, he feels secure. That's why he likes to be held in somebody's arms. It's the feeling of security. Adults have it as well. They like to feel held in. They like to feel that they can lean against something. It makes them feel secure. One cannot operate without that. It's not just a sense of privacy. You can be alone in a desert where there's nobody for 100 miles in any direction. And if you're living there, you'll still put up a tent, you'll still put up a fence around you, you'll do something to make yourself feel that you're in a confined area which you govern. Because the human being cannot govern infinity. The human being doesn't have the ability to master and to govern infinite space or infinite concepts. He can be governed by infinity, but he cannot govern infinity. And therefore he feels uncomfortable when he's exposed to something which is not defined and demarcated. He must have boundaries. And just as he cannot live comfortably with infinite space, so he cannot live comfortably with infinite time. He needs to have it broken up into units that have boundaries to them, a beginning, an end, a new beginning, another end. He needs to be able to structure them. It must be structured. If you give a person unlimited time, you'll find the job is never done. Say to a person, look, I don't need this. When you've got an opportunity, do such and such for me. You can be quite sure it will never ever be done. If there's no urgency, if there's no structure, it won't be done. We don't do it for ourselves and we don't do it for other people. Only when there's a sense of urgency, and sometimes you'll say to a person, do this, I need it in a year's time. And it also won't be done. That's the fellow who leaves his swatting for his examinations until 2 days before the exams. Why does he do it? There's still time, it's not structured. If he would break it down and say, this has to be finished at the end of January, and this has to be finished at the end of February, and this at the end of March, and he would then break it down further and say, if I'm to finish this by the end of January, then by the end of the first week of January I must be finished this, and by the end of the second week this. And he breaks it down further and he says, if by the end of the first week I must be finished this, then by the end of the first day of the first week I must be finished this, and if I'm not going to, my end of year deadline is going to suffer. If he breaks it down like that, then he has the self-discipline, then he structures it, then he can manage. Each day he knows what has to be contained in that day, and he can handle it far easier than the infinite concept that there's a broad spectrum of knowledge which has to be finished sometime in the future, the end of the year. Then it gets pushed off till the end of the year. People need the structure of time, but there always needs to be the realization that that time, that structure is a structure, that it's an empty utensil. When we wake up in the morning, what we have before us is an empty day, a kli. It's a utensil waiting to be filled, or to be partly filled, or to be left empty, at our own choice. But that's what we have before us. The importance of viewing time in that way, it's not only because through that one's able to master time and master oneself, but also it causes a far more relaxed and pleasurable attitude to the problem of aging. Viktor Frankl handled an individual who was depressed by the meaninglessness of his past. He's done nothing with his life. I'm sorry. It wasn't so much the meaninglessness of his past, it was the creeping old age. The fact that he has very little time left, and he's getting older, and that which everybody suffers from sooner or later. And Viktor Frankl questioned this person and says, do you have a calendar? He said, yes. What do you do with it? He says, I tick the days off. As the day goes, I tick it off. And he says, and when you finished a month, what do you do with it? He says, I tear it off and I throw it away and I start ticking off the next month. He says, that's your mistake. Don't do that. He says, get yourself a page a day diary. And when you finish each day, don't tick it off and throw it out. Tear it out and file it. Put it away. That's a day that's finished. That's a day that's been achieved. You've done something with that day. And watch that file grow. Find your pleasure in the days that are past, not in the days that are still to come. That's not what's important. Build up a storehouse of experience that's been. Look back. Think of the days you filed away. Not how thin the file's getting on the left-hand side from which you're taking the new leaves. Look how thick the file's getting on the right-hand side. That's what's important. You're going to be judged by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Viktor Frankl didn't say this part. You're going to be judged by the Ribbono Shel Olam by the thickness and quality of the file on your right hand side, not the left hand side. It's important, unimportant the left hand side. And that's why when we count Sfiras HaOmer, we don't count how many days still to go. That's not what's important, how many days to go. Because those are empty kelim, those are empty utensils, they don't mean anything. A utensil only has meaning when it contains something. A container is a container if it contains. To count the days that are yet to come is meaningless. You don't know how many there are, you don't know if you'll survive that long, and you don't know whether there'll be good days or bad days. They have no meaning. The only thing that does have meaning is the days that have already gone by. That we count. The first day of the Omer, the second day of the Omer, the third day of the Omer. We file them away. What have I achieved today? What have I achieved after 1 week, after 2 weeks, after 3 weeks? That's if you look at a day as an empty utensil which is there to be filled, which is there to be done something with, and then to be filed away in the storehouse of our experience. The Goyim don't believe in lunar years. They work on the basis of a solar year and always have. And the reason is because a solar year is far more comfortable to live with than a lunar year. It's far more comfortable for people who are not serious about the art of living. Why? Because if you have a solar system, if you believe in a solar calendar system, then you can always say, Moros or Kedaf. Tomorrow's another day. What I didn't do today, I'll do tomorrow. Because you cannot see the difference between tomorrow and today. Tomorrow is merely a repetition of today. And I've always got another chance. So my only fear is maybe I won't be here tomorrow. No, but Baruch Hashem, I'm healthy and the doctor says I'm doing alright. So the chances are I'll be here tomorrow. So what if I don't finish it today? I'll do it tomorrow. Comes tomorrow, comes the third day. Problems come when he gets closer to examinations. Then he doesn't quite understand what's gone wrong with his life. Why all of a sudden does he have so much work? He doesn't quite know how to cope with that. But be that as it may, let's say he's not studying for exams. He can go throughout his life pushing things off one day to the next without any worry that time is running out. Because there is no indication in the solar calendar system of time running out. There's merely monotonous repetition. Each day is a repetition of the day before. With the moon, you can't get away with that. Today, it's true. Moros Wekedach. Tomorrow is another day. Modus of Eskil in the Dach. It's not the same day as today. Tomorrow is another day. Today is gone. It will never come back again. Look at the moon tomorrow. It's not the same as the moon looked tonight. The naked eye can see that. There's been a change. There's been growth. Or there's been deterioration. I'm also getting older. Or deteriorating. Getting bigger or getting smaller. One thing's for sure. I'm not the same as I was yesterday. And what I could do yesterday, I cannot do today anymore. That's gone. I can do new things today. Maybe better things today. Maybe worse things today. It depends on opportunity and it depends on my own growth. But to repeat yesterday, to do the same things that I could have done yesterday, that I can't do today. And that saying that tomorrow is also another day is a terrible saying. It's a complete misunderstanding of what time really is. It's like saying, imagine a situation where somebody says, look, if you give me a bag, I'll fill it with Kruger Rands. And you come to him with a bag and you say, Achna, don't worry about this bag, I'll find another bag, it's alright. Fill both bags. Why another bag? Hey, this is also a bag. True, this is also a bag, but what about that empty bag there that could be filled with Kruger Rands? Huh? But today is gone. What does it help you that tomorrow is also a day? Today is gone and you're not going to get that back. If you work with the monotonous cycle of the sun going round, you look at the sun today, you look at the sun tomorrow, the change of seasons is so gentle that you don't notice it coming. It hits you suddenly. All of a sudden it's winter. All of a sudden the year's gone by, Pesach's come again, Rosh Hashanah's come again. What's happening? Why is time flying? It hits one suddenly, too late. That's the tragedy of time. When one follows a solar system, by the time you realize the passage of time, it's too late to do anything about it. Not so with the lunar system. Every day you realize the passage of time. Every day you look at that moon and you say, tomorrow I'm not going to see the moon the same, and tomorrow I'm not going to be the same. And therefore I'd better make use of today. And so one builds one's days. One fills one's days. It's not always possible to fill one's days with what one wants. A lot of one's time is cut out for one. cut out for one by decisions that one has taken oneself a long time ago, cut out for oneself by circumstances or by decisions that others have taken for one. But firstly, there's an awful lot that can be done through one's own decisiveness. One can change one's course, and one can manipulate the contents of one's day. But more important than that, while one cannot to a great extent control the activities of a day, one is totally at liberty to control the experiences of a day. You've got to go to work, you have no choice. But how you operate at work, how successful you are, religiously and emotionally what it does for you, how you relate to people at work, the effect that work has on you, the effect you have on other people, the quality of your work, that's up to you. Nobody is going to predetermine that. That each individual can do. And each day presents him with a new opportunity to do things differently, to fill the day more meaningfully, to be a little bit better, to be a little bit richer, to do things in different ways, and so to function on a better basis. The complete antagonism which the pagan races had to the Avodas Beis HaMikdash, this desire to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, what does that bother them so much about the Beis HaMikdash? They were destroying the Jewish people, they took them into exile. Why did they have to destroy the Beis HaMikdash so often? It's part of this Avoda. There's nothing that spoils the fun of fun as much as the clock. I'm told that in Las Vegas there are no clocks. You won't find a clock on a wall, nowhere. And that you won't find windows either. Once you're inside, and they try as far as possible to take you from one building to another by underground passages, so that you don't go out into the outside, you mustn't see what time of day or night it is. And in the hotels you can have breakfast, lunch, or supper 24 hours a day. You decide when you want breakfast. You want breakfast at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, fine, that's your breakfast. 5 hours later you want lunch, you have lunch 5 hours later. They try and remove you totally from the reality of a time system, because there's nothing that spoils fun so much as the knowledge that time is running out. That destroys it completely. And the Greeks and the Romans and the Egyptians could all enjoy themselves as long as they believed in the sun, and they all did believe in the sun. In Mitzrayim there was a paro at this time, we don't know exactly who or what, but virtually at this time who was the sun king. They worshipped the sun, they loved the sun. And the moon made them feel uncomfortable. They try to ignore it as far as possible. The Ribbono Shel Olam takes Moshe and Aaron out and he shows them the moon. That's what governs your life. Rather, not governs your life. You govern it. But that's what you watch. Don't watch the sun. The sun determines when you daven Shachris, Mincha, and Ma'ariv. The sun determines when Shabbos comes in. But time, usage of time, and passage of time, measure that with the moon. Because you'll see every day, you'll see a difference and you'll feel the development of it. And draw the attention of Klal Yisrael to that moon every single month. But while on the one hand the moon is a killer of fun, on the other hand it also allows a mechanism to operate which can assist a person in a state of depression. One of the problems in a state of depression, some forms of depression, is the feeling that I can't get out of a rut. Going along in a rut and I can't get myself out. It's too late and I've gone too far and there's not enough time left and I've already made a mess and it's too late to start again. That kind of a feeling. And it gets a person more and more and more down. How does he get out of it? And each day is built on the previous day. So each day has its foundations in depression. And each hour has its foundations in the previous hour. It has its foundations in depression. How does he break that vicious cycle and get out of the depression? The solar system, it's not possible. Because Moiros Oekedach, each day is simply a repetition of the day before. And if I was depressed yesterday, why shouldn't I be depressed today as well? With the lunar system, it's not so simple. With the lunar system, there's a thing as a Rosh Chodesh. Comes the end of the month and you look for the moon, there's no moon. It's gone. Wait, look, everybody's looking to try and be the witness who finds the new moon, and you see a tiny little sliver of light. There's a brand new moon. I can start again. Each month is a new kli, each month is a new utensil. And just as one can make a mess of a cake, you're baking a cake in the kitchen and you make a mess of it. That's no need to go into depression and to believe that every cake thereafter is going to be a mess. One can throw the cake out, clean the pan, and start again. Can be done if you believe in a lunar system. If you believe that every day is a new day, that every month is a new month, that every year is a new year, and it, one can start clean, one can say, this I've made a mess of, let's finish, let's lock those pots away, they're dirty, they're filthy, but I'm starting with a brand new pot. I can fill it with whatever I want, irrespective of what happened the previous times. That creates the possibility for optimism, even in the most depressed of individuals. That's why we have a Yom Kippur Kotan before every Rosh Chodesh. The day before Rosh Chodesh is called Yom Kippur Kotan, mini Yom Kippur. Because the next day, Rosh Chodesh, is a new beginning. One is able to start each month afresh, one is able to start each month anew, with new koichos and with new powers and with new strengths. And perhaps that's meant in the Mishnah in the beginning of Shavuos. Some of you who have been learning Gemara Shabbos will be familiar with part of it. There's a korban, there's a sacrifice that can be brought, korban oile v'yored, for an individual who was not in a fit state to walk in the Beis HaMikdash, and nevertheless he did so. Provided he did so in ignorance, he can bring the sacrifice and he's excused. He has to be ignorant. He has to have known once that there is such a din that you shouldn't do it, have been ignorant at the time that he did it, and later on have discovered that he did it, obviously, otherwise there's no way he can bring the korban. What happens to a person who never discovers that he did that wrong? You can use this as a symbol not only for that wrong, but for any wrong. What happens to an individual who doesn't know that he's doing wrong? Here again, you've got the depressing and pessimistic situation of living with a wrong, of living with a lie, and simply never push it, not knowing that one's off. Says Rabbi Shimon, al she'ein bo yediyo loy bischilo v'loy b'soif. Somebody who didn't know he was doing this wrong, not before he did it and not after he did it, so he doesn't have the opportunity of doing tshuva, he doesn't have the opportunity of bringing a korban, because he never knows, he never knew that he did wrong. The korban, the seir which is brought on Rosh Chodesh, that atones. Because Rosh Chodesh is a new beginning. Rosh Chodesh enables a person to say, look, I don't know where I've gone wrong in the past, but let me start afresh now. So you might say, what does that help? A person starts afresh, he still makes the same mistakes. It's not so. One finds this very clearly when one's learning a piece of Gemara or practicing a piece of music or preparing for a piece of learning. It doesn't make any difference. You make a mistake the first time, each time you revise it, you entrench that mistake more and more. And that's the problem we're talking about. A person who doesn't know he's made a mistake. He's preparing, he makes a mistake, and each time he goes over it, the mistake becomes more and more entrenched. What's the way of handling it? There's only one way to handle it, and that's each time you revise, to approach it as if you've never seen it before. If you're approaching it as a revision, it will be merely a monotonous revision and you'll be doing nothing but entrenching your first mistakes. There cannot be growth. You're simply revising your first experience. And revising your first experience means that whatever you experience then, you'll experience again. What's the point of it? What's the good of it? To revise, to do chazora, to revise means each time to revise afresh as if I've never seen it again. That way you're likely to pick up the mistakes which you made the first time. Because you have the advantage of experience plus the advantage of freshness and clean mind and new approach. And get rid of those mistakes. Life, it's the same. The ability to start afresh enables one to rid oneself not only of the mistakes of which one was conscious, but also the mistakes of which one was unconscious. Start new, it's a new month, let's start anew. I have the advantage of all my experience, plus the advantage of facing a blank future, a new day, a new month. That gives one tremendous potency and tremendous power. This is the way one needs to approach every single day of one's life, not only the Rosh Chodesh, not only the once a month experience, but every day of one's life. To look at it as a new kli, as a new utensil waiting to be sanctified. Waiting to be sanctified by means of being filled with things holy. And just as an object used by a tzaddik becomes holy, a kli in the Beis HaMikdash used for kibul domim or kibul yayin nisuach becomes kodesh. So a day which is used for kedusha that day becomes kodesh, just as a new month which is used for kedusha that month becomes kodesh. So each day that one starts and looks at it as an empty container, 24 beautiful hours, uninterrupted, lying ahead of one, clean start. One takes nothing into that day from previous days. Nothing that one doesn't choose to take. The human being has the power to start afresh. That's the bracha he's been given. That's the bracha of kedusha and the blessing of time that I'm giving you this new clean utensil. To be able to take the experience of the past and the optimism of a clear future to create kedusha, to create a sanctity with which to fill our futures.